Session number 8834, rule number 3.
Mr. Northcote, tape 3. So anything else that happened to you then before the end of 1914 in Egypt?
Yes, one interesting thing was the deposal, I don't know what the word's quite right, deposed Khedive and the arrival of Sir Henry McMahon as High Commissioner for Egypt. He arrived in a cruiser and I was one of 100 guard of honour to salute him with present arms to them and play God Save the King and what have you. There was a guard of honour of 100 of us and another one of an Egyptian regiment plus the police. It was quite interesting. And there was one other incident too when I was there. I was sent down as a guard, about 90 of us, with an officer and sergeant and so forth. I think it was the HMS, the cruiser HMS Warrior, four funnel cruiser, and one or two other warships, came in with a big number of captured German vessels, captured in the China Sea, Indian Ocean, all brought through the Suez Canal and into Alexandra Harbour. We were taken down, we weren't taken down, we marched down to the docks and went on board a tug and went round to these various ships, and five of us were put on a ship called the Heligoland, the cargo ship. The hatches were open. She was carrying one of the cargoes, a terrific consignment of groundnuts and various other things. They also, another interesting, there was a big quartermaster, huge German quartermaster, and he was nearly in tears leaving his. They got a pig on board that they were going to kill. They'd taken two out piglets. They'd had one. They killed one and eaten it, and it was called Klucks after von Kluck, the general, and he's showing his pictures of his family and in tears about Kluck leaving Kluck. He was so fond of him. Anyway, yeah, I don't know what happened to Kluck, but about 3 o'clock some Marines came on board and relieved us. We were taken to a ship, one of the German liners called the Lutzau. There were two sister ships, North German Lloyd Line. One was the Lutzau and the other one was the Derfflinger. And we spent the night on board, though. We'd had nothing to eat, and they just hashed up all our food, given us raw. They put it in a big bin and boiled it up and dished it out. We slept in the dining room with they had on the table. Then the next morning we were taken to the Derfflinger, and about 30 of us were put on the Derfflinger, the sister ship, with one officer and sergeant, corporal, to guard the crew. The crew was still on board. Some of the crew, not all of them. No engineers on board. They wouldn't allow them near the engine room. They had a Danish engineer looking after the engine, keeping them in with an assistant, keeping them in trim. Of course, we were generating electricity and all that sort of thing, and steam. And they had nearly 200 Chinese down in the hole, in the forward hole. We understood, or were given to understand, that they'd been more or less shanghaied in a way by the Germans. They'd come from China. I suppose they were given an inducement money, and taking them back to Germany to relieve manual workers so that he could go into the army, into the German army. And of course, that put paid to that. There were a lot of women, of course, on board these ships, and they were all taken ashore and put in internment camps, and the men. The men mostly were businessmen trying to get back to Germany, army officers and so forth trying to get back to Germany, navy men all trying to get back to Germany, been on some sort of missions out there. And we were 3 weeks on the ship. I did the cooking for our crowd with two other boys. And we did guard work, of course. We had to guard with loaded rifles, but there was no fear of any trouble.
What were these ships like, the German ships?
Beautiful. Oh, beautiful. Really beautifully equipped. The galley, we had the galley all tiled, beautiful galley with lovely cooking arrangements. I know I made a rice pudding. I found a thing of rice, and the chief steward, German chief steward, I told him what I wanted to do, and he gave me 2 gallon drums of evaporated milk. And I didn't know what quantity of rice he used, but the fellas, I got sugar as well from him, and the chaps were all blooming stuff. Anyway, coming back for saying Nelpins. They'd have nothing like it.
How did you get on with the Germans?
Very well. Well, we treated them. We didn't know. There was no bad feeling. We'd no ill feeling against them.
They would have been civilians.
Probably, if we'd been regular troops, it might have been a triple difference. Because yes. The officers that we had were all businessmen. And we didn't know the drill about that sort of thing.
Well, would these Germans have been merchant sailors?
Yes, yes.
No, they wouldn't have been.
All the crew, the deckhands and those sort of people, and as I say, the engineers, they would have all been taken off to the internment camp. They wouldn't allow anybody in the engine room except the Danish engineer, plus a couple of men he had looking after the engines. And, of course, we were allowed down. The only 2 police showed us all over, took us down the propeller shafts and showed us a beautiful engine, beautifully kept. And then after about a fortnight, a ship going to China is either P&O or British Indian, I'm not sure which, came into Alexandra Harbour. They got all these coolies up with all the bits and pieces. Belongings. All of them had something to make tea in. That was a must. And they all went down. The companion went on to a barge, a lighter, and taken over to the ship and back to China. And then, after 3 weeks, all the crew had been taken off. And we then, there were about 90 of us, plus sergeants and officers, and we went in a ship called the Osmania. This was a ship rather like one of the cross, in size, about the size of a cross channel ferry. And she used to do all the ports in the Eastern Mediterranean. In peacetime, passengers and cargo. And we had the whole of these about 900 German prisoners on board, some of them in the holds, packed in like sardines. In the dining saloon, they were lying on the floor, all over the floor. And on the door to the dining saloon, there was a double door and a single door on either side, swing doors. And we had 4 of us on guard there with loaded rifles, of course, and bayonets fixed. And we were only allowed 3 out to the toilet. It was about, there must have been nearly 100 in that room, in that dining saloon. More, actually. It was an awful job, really. And they used to argue, but and some of them, I remember one, he was a, I think he must have been a German officer, used to browbeating anybody lower than himself. And he said, "I want to go to the lavatory." And one of the boys, one of the lacrosse men, very hefty chap, he said, "You can't go." He said, he spoke English as German. He said, "There's two or three of your men out there now. Until one of them comes back, then you can go." He says, "I'm going to love it." He says, "If you don't get back in that room, I'll beat you, beat you off for you." He didn't bother about his rifle, he was going to cut it. No regular soldier would have done that, because he was just going to clout him if he didn't get back.
Wait, when the three went to the lavatory, did they have a guard with them? Did you have to take them?
No, they couldn't go anywhere else. It was so arranged that they couldn't get to any part of the ship except to the lavatory.
Did they cause you any trouble, this vast crowd of Germans?
No, none whatsoever. No.
What was their attitude? Were they sort of depressed?
We didn't see very much of them, except that lot in there. That's the only lot I remember, really. A lot of them down the hole.
And would these have been German servicemen?
Not all of them, no. A lot of them crew. Most of them crew. Because there were three liners that looked out of the Derfflinger and another smaller liner. There were about 12 cargo steamships and upwards of two dozen sailing vessels in those days, of course.
What happened to these ships?
Well, we were on board the Sosmania and we took them to Malta.
But would they have been used by the British, the ships?
Would they?
Would they have been used by the British for their own purposes? Were they commandeered by the British? The ships, the German ships?
Oh, gosh, yes. We went to Gallipoli in the Derfflinger, eventually.
Yes, I must ask you about that. Yeah. But they were definitely used.
Commandeered. Oh, yes. Prize.
These German, the prisoners you looked after, it would seem from what you have said they behaved very well.
Did
they keep the place clean? Were they good prisoners in that respect?
Oh, I wouldn't know. We never went in.
You didn't?
No. Just let them out to the lavatory and never went near them. They got their food. I don't know. I can't remember that even. That was seen to by other people, not the guards. Some of the crew on the ship did that part of it.
And where were they taken?
Malta.
To Malta.
It was not a long trip. It's about 1,000 miles, I suppose. Yeah.
Did you see anything about the activity in Malta? You know, when they were
unloaded? No. When we got to Malta, they came ashore and lined up in about column four, you know, and we were alongside with fixed bayonets. Right along each side of the column, with some in the front and some at the rear, and we marched up a valetta, and we marched up a steep ramp up to the town, and put them behind. They had a big, it's all been made ready, you see, that's why they didn't go for so long, and all this big wire internment camp there, put them all in there. All men, no women. The women were kept in Egypt, as far as I know.
The Chinese you mentioned earlier, did you have much to do with them?
No, nothing. Nothing. Just the only thing we had to watch them was they used to come up at night and use the scuppers for a lavatory. You know what the scuppers are, don't you? You know, the gunwale of the ship, the side of the ship. The scuppers are where the water runs. If the water comes over the side of the ship, it runs down the scuppers and out through holes over the side, back into the water.
And if they didn't use those, where else would they have gone, the Chinese?
Well, I don't know what they were in. We never saw it. The only time we saw it was when we went to Gallipoli. We were down there ourselves for our sins.
Did you see anything of the supplies of these ships? You know, did we get many resources from them? I think you mentioned the groundnuts. These supplies, these ships were actually carrying a lot of them, the German ships.
Oh, that's the only one we went on, was the Heligoland. She was a ship of about 4,000 or 5,000 tons, I should imagine. And in one of the holes, the only one we really looked in, was these great big sacks of enormous great gunny sacks of groundnuts. And one had been opened to see what it was, slit open, and we filled our pockets with them. Very nice too.
Well, could you now tell me what happened, you know, your next camp, your next sort of stage in Egypt? Where were you?
That was about mid-January. Mm-hmm. We went to Cairo by rail. It's just over 100 miles. And we were asked what would be the third class of wooden seats. Like a Pullman thing, only with wooden seats instead of upholstered seats. And the ends are rather like the American chains with little rails across. You step in under a canopy sort of business, you know, the type of thing. And then, of course, when I got to Cairo, with always Shanks's pony, you had to march everywhere in those days. There was no trucking or anything like that. Carry your kit bags as well. And we got to a place called Abbasir.
Yeah.
If any listeners is interested, it's the place where Sadat was assassinated. It's on the road to Heliopolis, where the Cairo airport was. About 3 or 4 miles east of the city of Cairo. And there's a tram terminus in those days, ordinary trams. And we used to go in on the trams when we had a bit of money to spare. And the training there was very tough. Long marches across the desert, anything 10 miles, 12 miles. And then the sham fight at the end of it and back again.
What was your sham
terribly
fights?
Hot.
What did these, were they useful?
Well,
did
that's one group against another, a mock battle, in other words. And we did one thing. I don't know whether it was anything to do, whether they knew that we were going to Gallipoli, or with a sort of mock landing. And we went in platoons. This platoon consists of about 50 men, supposed to be in a boat of some type. And there's a track, you can't call it a road, it's a camel track, the one that goes to Suez from Cairo, the old camel track. There's a big tower about every 5 miles, big stone tower. I don't know what the towers were for. And we came in platoons with the officer and sergeants and that. And as soon as you hit that road, that was supposed to be dry land. And there was a hill at the back called Signal Hill, about 400 or 500 feet high. And some of our signals were up there, and they had a heliograph. And as soon as we touched down there, the shone that has kept on flashing this heliograph, and that was supposed to be gunfire. When we got ashore, the whistle went, you're all wiped out. That's what we were told. You haven't got a chance, you're all wiped out. So, joking, really, in a way.
Do you think that was practice for Gallipoli, the landings at Gallipoli?
It might have been. I don't know. It might have been. It's only about 2 months or 3 months, so 2.5 months before. We stopped training in March because of the heat.
Was it very hot?
Oh, very hot. Very hot. We stopped training then, and we did... I did a fortnight on machine guns. I did a fortnight on signalling. Anything to learn something and pass the time away.
How did you get on with machine guns? Were you as good a shot with them?
Well, I was an adapter with the rifle. And I was, when you say, how did I get on? They wanted to wanted to take me into the machine gun company. There were two. We only had two guns. They were very old. One was a converted. One was a 303 Vickers. The other one was a converted .45, which they used on warships as a rule. Very heavy. And the mechanism was still there. The heavy mechanism. The action, and they had to have a baffle on the front to catch the extra gases from the explosion to drive the mechanism back. It was too heavy for the ordinary 303 recoil.
But you didn't think of going into the machine gun corps?
They wouldn't let me go. Our lieutenant and captain wouldn't let me go. Said, no, you're too good with a rifle to go there, because I was a sniper. I took a friend of mine, a great friend, Grimshaw. We both took our aperture sights we used in the rifle club and at Disley, and we formed a sniping corps, only two of us. And my brother hadn't taken his aperture sights, so he couldn't use his. But he had his telescope. He had a big signals telescope to use it to foreshooting on the range. And he spotted, and we were firing at the Turks. Well, they had a sniper with a... We were quite convinced he had a telescopic sight.
I must ask you a lot about that later on, when we get to Gallipoli.
Yes,
that's very interesting.
Yes,
but how about your signalling? You said apart from machine gunnery.
Oh, well,
what was that?
Flag wagging.
Oh, semaphore.
What they call flag wagging. Yeah.
But, how about your life, though, at this time in Cairo? Did you have much entertainment? How did you all
amuse yourselves? No, we were an awfully nice bunch of boys with us. We're all about the same age, 20, 21. I think there was Grimshaw. My cousin was a private with me. He joined the year the war broke out. An old friend, Gerald Plant, joined with me, through me. Two brothers called Forbes and another little chap called Simmons. And we all went about together. Wherever we went, nearly always together, if we could do. One trip we did, two or three trips to the museum. We were interested in things like that. Went all over the museum, saw the mummies and all that sort of thing. And I went over the fire station, a wonderful fire station, all horse-drawn with beautiful horses. We used to go to Groppi's, the famous tea room, Groppi's, and just above that, a Ford One cake with a cup of tea. Beautiful cakes, real French pastries. And the other thing we did, we went to the pyramids. And we went inside, we had a guide. We had to take our boots off because it was too slippy. We went inside, down into the Queen's Chamber, and then up into the King's Chamber. And we came out and put our boots on again, paid the guide. He had a little boy looking after our boots. Whether it was his son or not, I don't know. And we climbed to the top. That's very interesting. 470 feet on the outside. And on the top, there was a flagpole, well, like a flagpole, it's an iron pole, with four stays, wire stays. And I'm not exaggerating, that you look at the two pyramids, and they both look pointed, but if you look carefully, you'll see one's not, it's blunt. And the platform on top of that pyramid is at least half the size of this room, cleared of stone. Must have been to another 20 feet or more. A stone missing from the top. And sitting under the flagpole, proper old Gippo, with a white beard, with a goatskin of water. They have the goatskins. And they tie up the legs and sew them up in the legs, and wherever, you know, where there's an opening, sewn up. And where the neck is, they have something put inside, like a funnel, and they carry the water in that, and cork it up, and a piece of leather or something stuck to his older shoulder. They carry the water in that. He used to climb this pyramid, the old boy, and he had a little spirit stove, and he had strong Turkish coffee with a lot of sugar in it. Almost got a spoon to drink it. And little tiny, I've been on several, two or three dows in Alexandria, and little tiny metal cups, enamel cups. Yeah, that was two piastres at half a day's pay, 5 pence. Weren't he glad to give the old boy 5 pence and say he'd had a cup of coffee on the top of the pyramid. We had to get down rather quickly because the sun was starting to set. Right across the desert, nothing. Sun for hundreds of miles.
Lovely sight, was it?
Oh! Sunsets there. God, out of this world.